Once a month, we visit with our partners at the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology, SULA, for a segment we call Underground History. Chelsea Rose and Mark Tveskov of SULA bring in people and stories about archaeology and the intricate and fascinating process of truly unearthing the past. This month, we focus on the story of Vanport. This was an instant city that grew up quickly during World War II to house shipyard workers in Portland. Its name, Vanport, was a combination of Vancouver and Portland, and the city, once the second most populous in Oregon, was hard by the Columbia River. That proved to be its undoing. Columbia River floods in May 1948 broke through a dike and inundated Vanport. Almost instantly, 18,000 people were homeless. Vanport was never rebuilt. Why? Here's where the story takes on racist tones. Vanport was home to a lot of African Americans. There was a concerted effort to preserve the history of Vanport that we'll talk about in this edition of Underground History. Our guest, James Harrison, Professor Emeritus of History at Portland Community College. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for asking me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Laura Laforte is with us as well. She's with the organization Vanport Mosaic. Her preferred title appears to be Story Midwife. Laura, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And, of course, Chelsea Rose from SULA in the studio with me again. Always good to see you.
Oh, good to be here.
So let's talk about what went right and what went wrong in Vanport. Dr. Harrison, how quickly did it grow during the war?
Well, it started off in 1942. And by 1944, there were about 40,000 people living in Vanport, so it grew very quickly. It was also built very quickly. A housing development for 40,000 people was built in about 1 year's time, but it was populated as it was being built. So the first people moved in December of 1942, and then it grew from there.
And it was never meant to be permanent, is that right? I mean, the construction was like without foundations, I read.
Well, the foundation, it was built with wooden foundations so that it can be built quickly. In 1942-43, over 160,000 people moved into Portland that had a population of about 350,000. And what that meant was you needed housing quickly. So that's why it was built without foundation. But in addition, the federal funds that built it stated that it had to be torn down within a year after the war was over.
And that didn't happen, though, did it?
No, it did not, because of changes. One is that we still had nationwide a housing problem, and the returning vets needed a place to stay, and the returning Japanese needed a place to stay. And some of the people who came did not want to leave. About half the people who came did not want to leave. And so housing was at a premium. And so Vanport changed from being a wartime city to being a peacetime city with different functions.
Now, during the time that Vanport was occupied, there was no official of segregation, at least of public facilities. But so, what was the general run of the place in terms of how people black and white were dealt with or dealt with each other?
Well, actually, at Vanport there was segregation. The city had, for example, two school zones. The eastern zone was all white because that's what the population was. And the western zone had three distinct black neighborhoods. Remember that we're still in the age of Jim Crow segregation. And so that did take effect. In addition, the mayor of Portland, Earl Riley, was an out-and-out racist. And the housing authority had two roles, one black, one white, in terms of where they would put people. So there was segregation in the housing. Where there was a lack of segregation was in the eastern school zone, where the superintendent determined that the schools would be integrated.
Now, by 1948, when the flood hit, Vanport's population was down considerably, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It was down to 18,700, according to the Multnomah Sheriff.
Mm-hmm. And so the whole point of not rebuilding Vanport was what were the factors that went into that, Dr. Harrison?
Simply that not rebuilding it after the flood?
Right.
Oh, it was mostly because the city government, and remember, Vanport was outside of the city limits of Portland at that time. And so it was within Multnomah County, but not the city. Yet it was the city which administered it. And as I mentioned to you, the mayor was racist, and racism was part of the general trend of the country at that time. So one reason for not rebuilding it was to get rid of the new population, the blacks, mostly from the South. Another reason was that Vanport is located about 15 feet below river level. And so it was not the best place to build. It was the available place, but not the best place to build.
And a lot of the money that built it in the first place was tied to the Kaiser shipyards, right, with the wartime shipbuilding effort. So was there, you know, a lack of an economic push for that workforce? Did that change after the war was over?
Well, not that Kaiser funded it. It was funded by the federal government. But you're right. As the war toned down in 1944-45, shipbuilders, black and white, began leaving. And so that's why the population went down, and some of the houses were deconstructed in 44 and 45 as the number of people living there decreased.
We are talking here on Underground History about Vanport, which was a thriving city on the Columbia River between Portland and Vancouver, hence the name Vanport. A lot of African Americans in it, a lot of shipyard workers during World War II, still 18,000 people plus living there in 1948 when the Columbia River came in and swept it away. So we're talking to Professor James Harrison, emeritus professor at Portland Community College, and also we have with us from Vanport Mosaic, Laura Loforti, who calls herself a story midwife, along with Chelsea Rose from the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology. Questions, comments, welcome on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org. So, Laura Loforti, I want to turn to you because Vanport Mosaic, the slogan right there on the front page of the website is memory activism. In these times of collective amnesia, remembering is an act of resistance. Tell us a bit about that slogan.
Yeah, I mean, it's an aspiration, it's a mission more than a slogan. It's an invitation to all of us to realize that history is not in the past, history is now, and to realize that there are intentional efforts to erase certain chapters of our histories. The forgetting is intentional, and so I think that remembering should be intentional. So our invitation is to gather on the stories as told by those who experience them and make meaning together and accept the complexity and living with more questions than answers. And I think it's a process of listening and remembering together.
When did Vanport Mosaic come together and what does the name mean?
So we started actually as a collective in 2014. We started. My personal involvement was through oral histories. My background is in journalism and media making, and as you mentioned, my preferred title is story midwife. So my approach to storytelling is to realize, to acknowledge that the stories are there. They are not ours. They are not untold, but they need support to be brought to life in a way that can be celebrated. So that's my practice as participatory media maker. And so that was my approach to the story through oral histories in collaboration with communities and the Vanport families. But of course, there were many other efforts before I even heard of Vanport, of course, as also a foreigner. And so the initial, the spark of Vanport Mosaic was truly to get together with Professor Harrison, with Brandy Mitchell, who had a poem, Sholanda Sims, who had an incredible musical, who was already creating knowledge around it. And many other artists, students, historians, dolphins. I mean, the stories were out there. And so we just got together and decided that we wanted to amplify each other's efforts. And we offered the first Vanport Mosaic Festival, which was in 2015. And that was the beginning. What we realized is that the more we offered these stories to the public, the more people wanted to know about it, and the more Vanport former residents came and asked to tell their own stories. So at today, we recorded over 50 oral histories. And now our festival, which this year will be from May 22nd to June 7th, is now 2 week long. And it starts with Vanport, but we also explore the many other silence histories of our region. So I would like to invite everyone to join us, especially on May 25th. Which is Memorial Day when the flood happened, and we commemorate that anniversary at Expo Center and in the area of former Vanport. And we offer bus tours, walking tours, exhibits, oral history screenings, presentations. So that is definitely the day to celebrate the Vanport, the spirit of Vanport.
So we mentioned the population, about 18,500 mm-hmm. believed at the time of the flood. 15 people died. Obviously, thousands more did not. I mean, anybody who would still have memories would be fairly old by now. They would have been fairly young at the time, too. I mean, but have you had any particular difficulty finding people, Laura?
Well, initially, yes. Particularly because I think it's not even that it was difficult to find them. Many people were not interested in sharing the story anymore. And I think the reason is that the questions that were asked to them were always the same questions, right? It became the story of the flood, which, of course, is a critical moment of that history. But again, this, as Professor Harrison explained, this was a city that it was an incredible sort of experiment in a way. And so when we started to ask more, what I call more generous and expansive questions about who was there, what were their relationships, what food they ate, what they built and what they lost and what they rebuilt afterwards, this story became much larger, and more people wanted to tell their little piece, hence the name of the mosaic. It became this effort to tell a story together and collect as many personal experiences and to create a mosaic of stories that might sometimes even contradict each other, but that life, that is community. There are many experiences and many truths. And our effort as a memory activism platform is not to tell this is true, this is, you know, of course we work with Professor Harrison, so if something's not true, we would know. but truly, you know, acknowledge the memories and the experiences of everyone who wants to remember with us.
One of the things I love the most about this project and this festival, which I've been very excitedly watching over the past several years, is how, as academics or, you know, archaeologists, historians, we always try to tell the most accurate narrative we can, and we're often grappling against the master narrative, which is usually really biased and problematic. But in truth, the most accurate narrative is a bunch of different threads. And so the way that this organization is telling this story is so cool because it is a million stories, and that's how mm-hmm. these historical events really happen in our experience. So that's really exciting to see happen. And I also love how accessible it is to the public, and not always the public that thinks they are interested in history. Right. So the historical society or museums are going to have one audience, but to have music and plays and photo exhibits and all this different way to communicate history is bringing in a huge demographic that might not necessarily think that they are interested in history. So that's also really exciting, I think, from this project.
Well, thank you.
And it's, as you said, Laura, where everybody gets their own little piece of the mosaic. I mean, you get to put your own tile in it, and together an entire picture forms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And has there been any archaeology in the site of Vanport? You know, I know there's a golf course and some other stuff there, but, you know, has anybody looked at kind of curating some of these artifacts that are coming from there to add another layer to this story?
Go ahead, Dr. Harrison.
No, please, Professor Harrison, go ahead.
I was going to say that there is a lady, I can't recall her name right now, who has gone through the Vanport area and picking up objects. There are some of them embedded in the MAC station at Vanport. the Delta Vanport Max Station. Some of them are in debt, are stayed there. And occasionally they are exhibited as well. But the area was practically destroyed. There is the slab of the theater. There are a couple of buildings that had concrete foundations, and the slab of the movie theater, a 700-seat movie theater that was non-discriminatory, and it showed three features a week, three different features, so that people could be entertained, if you will, during the wartime. But the rest of it flooded, it was gathered up, and it was burned. Mm. So there are some archaeological remnants there still under the mud, but there has not been, to my knowledge, an official dig at that place.
Wow, okay. So there's something to think about for archaeologists. This is Underground History on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking to James Harrison, Professor Emeritus of History at Portland Community College, Laura Lauforti, story midwife from Vanport Mosaic, and Chelsea Rose, of course, from the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology. The topic is Vanport, the large city that vanished in a flood in 1948 along the Columbia River. We have a phone call here from Don and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning. There is a theory that the Amazon Married Student Housing Complex at the University of Oregon utilized some of the buildings from that era. They were moved down here. And I actually lived in one of these things. It was based on a 2x2 stud, if you believe it. They were very flimsy and were... I did my master's thesis on it, and the theory was that it had been moved down here from Portland, and I'm just wondering, and actually, they were great. It was $40 a month when I was a master's candidate, and you know, the family could rent a place for $40 a month, utilities paid.
Wow.
I mean, it was great as far as that, but of course, the walls were very thin. In the survey that I did, I asked a lot of people, could you hear the neighbors, and a lot of people made some rather interesting remarks, such as, well, we could hear the neighbors down to the last kiss goodnight. But honestly, those units are still, the ones that we lived in, which have been replaced, are still, they won't die. They've been moved over on 19th Avenue, mm-hmm. and they're low-income housing still. And I wonder, Professor Harrison, if you know if any of the buildings, or if those are the buildings that were part of Vanport, were there any salvageable ones?
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks for the question, Don.
Yeah, that is correct. As I mentioned before, beginning in 1944, houses were deconstructed and they were sent to other areas. For example, sent up to Tacoma to house the sailors and their families. Some were sent to Eugene and they became housing for the students. One of the reasons is because there was a shortage of housing in Eugene. One unit at least was sent to the University of Portland, but I'd like to use that to expand a bit more on Vanport. As the veterans came in, there was a bill passed in 1944, the Readjustment Act, the GI Bill of Rights, that allowed them to use federal money to go to college, but there was no college in Portland. Mm-hmm. There was Eugene and Salem and Southern Oregon. And so the Board of Higher Education established a two-year school at Portland called Vanport Extension. And after the flood, this continued on both at Swan Island and at Grant High School. And about 3 years later, they moved to a new setting in downtown Portland, the old Lincoln School building, which is still there. It's now called Lincoln Hall, and Vanport College became Portland State College, now Portland State University.
So PSU had its roots in Vanport. It was really interesting to read that.
Yes. It was nicknamed the college that would not die.
Indeed, it would not. So now the people, I mean, it sounds like the attitude of Earl Riley, the mayor of Portland at the time, was if you do not build it, they will not stay. And mm-hmm. Is there good records, Dr. Harrison, of where people scattered to from Vanport? Did most of them stay in the area? Did most of them move on?
Of those who came in, about half stayed. In fact, there was a survey in 1944 that indicated about half of the people planned to stay if there was housing and jobs, and that is what happened. So we have people who went back home, whether it was Arkansas or Texas, and there were people who stayed in this area, filtered into Portland and were redlined into the Albina District. Some went to Vancouver as well. In fact, there's a book about the first families of Vancouver, the generation of 43. 1943 was when they came. And some went to Eastern Oregon and lived in the Tri-Cities area and participated in the nuclear industry there.
Oh, sure, where the Richland High School atomics dwell and that sort of thing, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, Laura Laforte, you mentioned that the big festival is coming up May 22nd through June 7th for Vanport Mosaic. Is there a pop-up or any other sort of visible thing that people can visit? I mean, the professor talked about the displays at the Delta Vanport MAX station mm-hmm. on the light rail line. Anything else out there that people can sort of visually see before the festival?
Sure, yeah. So we have also a pop-up exhibit that's traveling, and it will be, actually, I think it opens next week at the Gresham Historical Society. So that is our pop-up exhibit. There are six panels that go from life in Vanport to the people to shipyard and, of course, the flood and the aftermath. So that will be in display, I think, for a month at Gresham Historical Society. And we do, we have the big festival, but truly we do presentations and oral history screenings throughout the year. So I would suggest to just connect, sign up for our newsletter, go on our website, which we are in the process of redesigning, but you will find some of our oral histories there, and just join us. Again, the idea of memory activism is also that people who come to the events are memory activists. So it's we consider it a movement,
okay.
And so we invite your listeners to join us.
Okay, it's at vanportmosaic.org. Laura Laforte is a story midwife. James Harrison, Professor Emeritus of History at Portland Community College. Thank you both for joining us on this edition of Underground History on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
Chelsea Rose, always good to have you in the studio for Underground History. Thanks for setting this up.
Yeah, good to be here.
That's it for this hour of The Exchange. Music in hour two coming up.